My name is Chloe, and this is the Feed or Flow podcast, where you'll find authentic conversations on how to get your period back and restore your metabolism from years of disordered eating, low-calorie diets, and excessive exercise regimes. No trendy diets of celery juice and broccoli sprouts will be found here. Rather, my mission is to teach you balance and how the foods you've most likely cut out of your diet are the very ones that are essential for health. It's time we stop fearing food and embrace all that it can do for us. Food freedom, vivacious health, and a monthly menstrual cycle is possible, and I'm going to show you how to achieve this type of wellness without obsession. Hello, hello, it's me, Chloe, and we are going to have a great time today. I really enjoyed my conversation with Michael. It's not too often that I get to have a man on the podcast or on my YouTube channel or just in general. It's not too often that I talk to men about the topic of, you know, food freedom and body image and body positivity and all of that. But when I found Michael's Instagram page, I fell in love. I fell in love with just the humor, yet the authenticity and the like truth bombs that he would just like set off in nearly every single reel. And so I invited him onto the podcast because he is someone who talks about all of these things. And as a performance nutritionist, and he's a, you know, personal trainer, he's someone who has firsthand kind of eyewitness into diet culture and how it can really screw people up when it comes to their relationship to food, and it can really mess with their health. And so we had a great conversation about all of the things. We even talk about Kim Kardashian within the first like minute or so. So be prepared for that. So when I started the Get Your Flowing course and I opened up the community, I started, you know, reading all of the chats, and I would come across all these like amazing messages from people being like, I for the first time was able to sit down and have dinner with my husband, or I was able to take my kids out to ice cream and actually enjoy it with them. And all these just really transformational, just amazing things. And I started just snapshotting, you know, everything that someone would say, just like, ooh, this is like cool, like I'll snapshot this, you know, maybe I'll use it later on Instagram to show people kind of what's going on in the course. Well, I officially have had to move this folder of just like little, you know, Get Your Flow on course snapshots into my hard drive because there are so many. There are over 450, is like, what is here? 467 little like messages that I just like snapshotted from the group. And those were the important things. I don't just snapshot like, hi, how are you guys? I snapshot the like transformational big stuff. What's going on? This is how I've changed. This is how grateful I am for the community, all of that. I snapshotted all of that. And there's over 450 like messages. It's insane. So yes, I moved it over to my hard drive because I don't got any of that space on my computer, to be honest. But it just really has been amazing, and it just really does go to show what happens when you step into a community, into a safe space, into a sisterhood of other women who are on this journey of recovery with you. The transformations are happening fast, they are happening quickly, they are staying, which is the important thing, right? So people are able to make a big change and keep at it and then continue to even add on more. And it's just been so heartwarming, beautiful, like just there's no words for it. It's just a feeling. I know that these girls are getting their life back. They are, you know, healing their relationship with food. Many of them have already gotten their period back, and it's just I love it. I love it. So if you are done not making progress in your recovery and you want to make progress, trust me, the Get Your Flow On Course community is the place for you. So you can head down to the the description box to this podcast, and you can learn about the course there, or you can just head on over to my Instagram at flowwithchloe, and you can find all the links there, or head on over to www.flowwithchloe.com. So, Michael, on Instagram, you had one of those like Twitter post things. I don't even know if people are actually writing on Twitter and then taking a snapshot, or if it just they make it look like it's a Twitter post. But I do.
I write it on Twitter. I write it on Twitter, screenshot, and then post it over. Yeah.
Perfect. Absolutely. Now I know the influencer insights here. I've always been very curious. But you said, of course, you're tired and thinking about food all day. The fitness industry has not only normalized over-restriction, it encourages us to wear it as a badge of honor. Stop denying your body what it needs to thrive. And I wanted to bring this up because I wanted to ask you if you saw Kim Kardashian at the Met Gala.
Unfortunately, I did see Kim Kardashian at the Met Gala. Yeah, I've listened to snippets of the interview and it's awful. Yeah.
So Kim Kardashian, for the listeners who aren't, I know everyone's aware of her, but who aren't aware of this whole situation, this was what, May 2nd, so this was 2 days ago. She was at the Met Gala and she was wearing this, whose dress was it again? It was like
Marilyn Monroe's dress. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Marilyn Monroe's dress. And so she's talking to one of the interviewers and she said, yeah, well, it didn't fit, right? So I had to lose 16 pounds in like 2 weeks or something, she said, which is like absurd. And then she goes and says, like, I ate a bunch of tomatoes. And here she is on live like television with, I mean, she has millions of followers. She's one of the most famous people in the world right now with so many young girls who are just obsessed with her. And here she is outwardly just proclaiming her like severe restriction and very unsustainable weight loss. And when I read your little Twitter post saying like, we encourage restriction, we wear it as a badge of honor, I was just like, this is exactly that. Like Kim K is wearing it as a badge of honor. If I fit in this dress now.
I know it's bizarre. Like you surely you'd think the amount of kind of pushback she's had throughout her time of being a kind of, she's not an influencer, she's more than that, but you know, kind of having her influencing status, you'd think that she'd slightly become aware of the intricacies and the dangers of what she's doing, but there is nothing there at all. She's just wearing that as a badge of honor, as the fitness industry does with all the wacky diets and exercise protocols. And yeah, it's incredibly frustrating how normalized that is. And now the amount of people that will read the approach that she took, she mentioned kind of clean foods or something ridiculous and super low calories, not eating sugar. And people will watch that and think, oh, cool, right. That's healthy. And that's how I should lose weight. And it's just brutal.
I literally, when I was watching the interview, it popped up. A bunch of people sent it to me on my Instagram. They're like, have you seen this? So I started watching it. I literally was in bed. It was like, I mean, it was even late. It was like 8 o'clock and I was just like done for the day. And I was in bed with a tub of chocolate, like double chocolate ice cream. And my sister's wedding is in literally like, it's on the 14th. So it's in about less than 2 weeks now. And I have this beautiful dress that I'm wearing to the wedding and everything. And here I am sitting and I'm eating my like chocolate ice cream while Kim Kardashian is eating only tomatoes to try and fit into her.
But no, your approach is way healthier. Like that should absolutely be fine. You know, like that you never need to cut things out of your diet to have a healthy diet. Like it's all the kind of danger in quotation marks is in the dose, you know. It's it's incredibly frustrating. I was going to do a post on it, but I actually just got more annoyed the more I was thinking about it. I was like, you know what, I'm not touching it again. We've done enough posts on Kim Kardashian.
I did a little reel on it and I actually had done a kind of a response video or maybe kind of like deep dive video into the Kardashians and how much photo editing and Photoshop and everything that they utilize. And so I had just like 2 weeks ago uploaded that onto YouTube, like whole like deep dive. Kylie Jenner, her like sister, spent over, this is just projected, like minimum projected, over $1 million on plastic surgery and things like that to look the way she does. And you look at her pictures of when she was like 14, 15 years old compared to her now, she's about 27 or something. Radically different. And again, it's that like we look at that and we think, I have to look like these people, and they can't even uphold the standards of beauty that they
You know,
are
and I
setting.
know, and it's, I think it's really important as well, because I get a lot of criticizing comments and DMs from usually like gym bros, because my approach is very different to the normal personal trainer approach. And it's very easy to go on the offensive when people start kind of talking about these things or taking these certain approaches. But it's, I think it's really important to take a step back, and you actually just start to feel a bit sad for their family, because they must be really unhappy to spend that much time kind of abusing their bodies and putting their bodies through whatever they have done to try and kind of fit societal norms or even shift societal norms. You know, they are kind of one of the core contributors to that. But you do just start to feel really unhappy for them. Like I would be genuinely interested to sit down with one of them and have like a proper one-to-one conversation and see what their thought process is, because I'm sure it's not as happy as they portray on social media.
Totally. Well, if you watch their show, it's filled with a lot of drama and stuff. And that's kind of the hype of it all. They get people caught up into their very dramatic lives. And it seems entertaining for people. My kind of question with this is, I literally just don't understand how all of these, I mean, and it's not even just celebrities now. I think we got to call out that it's influencers as well. There's so many influencers who get so much Botox and cosmetic surgery and all that. And listen, I'm not like dissing anyone for getting anything done. I personally got a nose job done literally 4 months ago. I was playing soccer like 4 years ago. Someone elbowed me in the nose and I had a complete collapsed septum on my left side for 4 years and just couldn't breathe. Finally went and got surgery. My sister has gotten surgery and she didn't even break her nose. I'm fine with that. What I'm questioning here, or what I don't understand after going through the surgery, is how they are all doing this stuff and multiple things when it literally, like, I mean, it wiped me out. It wiped me out. I was under the knife for 7 hours. 7 hours. Waking up from the anesthesia was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. Going under was scary. But then the whole kind of recovery process, I couldn't like eat for weeks because you can't really move your mouth. I had headaches all the time. I was swollen. I was bandaged up. And I just don't even get how they are keeping up with all of this, because it takes a long time to recover from a surgery.
Yeah, completely. I think we probably really underappreciate how much time they spend going through these processes and the toll it's taken on their bodies and their mental health.
And their mental health. Well, that's the thing. I was like, I didn't see people for like a straight up like month. I couldn't really leave my house. I couldn't smile. I couldn't laugh. I couldn't like do anything. It took me 2 months to be able to laugh again, because smiling would pull all the things in my face, and it'd like move the muscles, or not muscles, the bones in my nose. So it really makes you think that these highlight moments that we see of them, like at the Met Gala or at the, you know, Emmy Awards and stuff like that, they're just highlight reels, and it doesn't equate to their life. And I don't know, over the past couple of years, I've just really learned to really appreciate and love my very simple life with my friends, my family. No one really knows me, but it's great. It's great to just be a normal human being. And I think we can kind of look at all these people and we can, what's the word, aggrandize them. We think they're so great, and we idolize, that's the word I was looking for. We can idolize them without really understanding that they could be dealing with a lot of health issues from the restrictive dieting that they're...
Yeah, completely agree. And once again, about the kind of hateful comments and stuff as well, it's very easy. Like you'll see people that kind of promote this kind of body positivity, body autonomy, body neutrality, kind of whichever camp you're in. You see people posting that content on social media, and then those people start to feel bad about wanting to change their bodies, and people start getting criticized on an individual level. And I think it's really important for us not to kind of make a... kind of to put all the blame or focus on one person. You know, like, it's a huge societal issue, and that's what we really need to try and shift. And this is kind of the goal of my content, you know, that I want to be a big part of the fitness industry shifting into a more accepting and welcoming place for everybody, not just the people that fit into the box of what fitness, we're told fitness is supposed to look like. So yeah, it is very easy to kind of to jump on one person and tell them that they're doing something bad or wrong, but I think it's so deep. Like, society needs to shift on so many factors here.
So deep, so deep. Which leads me to the question. I'm really curious. How did you get into this? As a man in the space, it's pretty rare to see. And so I was like very happy when I saw that, where it's like, you're not just talking about the beauty standards or the diet standards for women. It's for everyone. I think it's really important to note that men have just as much pressure to look a certain way and eat a certain way and have or portray this certain type of image. So I would be very curious to hear how you got into your performance nutritionist, right?
Yeah. So kind of performance nutrition is my background. So I like to think that I come from it from like a very evidence-based background too. But I'd love to say there was like a moment that like switched. Like a lot of people that work within this space, there's usually like a thing or a moment that's kind of caused them to maybe shift, and they perhaps kind of had an eating disorder in the past or something like that. I consider myself very lucky that I've maybe had disordered eating habits just from what the fitness industry had told me, but I've never suffered with an eating disorder. I've always had a fairly healthy relationship with food and exercise. My journey is mainly just come from working with so many clients over so many years and realizing that there are a hell of a lot of people that are being failed by the fitness industry. You know, there's a lot of people that turn to the fitness industry for help and it doesn't help them in any way. If anything, it ends up making them worse because they just provide them with other disordered eating habits that they follow, you know? So just from years of working with clients, I've also had some brilliant clients in the past who have been very honest with the content that I create, which I quite like. The content I used to create was maybe a bit more bro, I'm using air quotation marks here, which is maybe kind of the norm of personal training. And then you realize that it's actually not helping that many people other than those that are already kind of quite within the exercise scene. So just from working with some brilliant people that told me my content needed to change, or maybe there's some things that are slightly wrong with it and this is how it can improve. And then just a slow progression, really. It's been, I always feel a bit bad of stepping into this space and like another part of it as well, because I know that especially when you start talking about body positivity, like the movement is not for me. It wasn't created by people like myself. I'm a white straight guy who's got like a little bit of muscle mass. So I'm kind of what you're told the fitness industry is supposed to look like, you know, like this is what fitness is. And this is the only way that you can be healthy. And I think it can be really powerful when someone who maybe fits that normal fitness bracket is saying, okay, this is what fitness looks like, it can look like, but it doesn't have to look like this. And I think that can be really powerful. But then I'm also aware that I don't want to kind of encroach on spaces that maybe I'm not too welcome. So yeah, that's kind of how I started out on it. And it's just been a progression of kind of trialing content and working with some brilliant people and engaging with other content creators like yourself and having brilliant chats like this, where you just start to learn about people better and what really makes them click. And then just, yeah, I'm still learning, you know, like I'm sure I still get some things wrong with the posts that I do, but I like to think now that I'm having such a big impact compared to the kind of old school approach that I was taking maybe 6-7 years ago.
No, I really love that this is coming from your just experience of working with people and you just being like, something isn't really adding up and people are desiring something else or this just isn't working for them at all. And I think that's really like good on you for being able to not, like step back and be like, okay, maybe my approach needs to shift here. Maybe the messaging needs to shift and you're able to see the person as the individual as they are and as the, you know, the struggles that they're going through and not just, I see so many people just like, even if you're tired, you have to work out today. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, that's such a toxic message. I'm like, if you're tired, run down, overly stressed, exercise is not what you should be doing. You need to run yourself a bubble bath. You need to go out and be social. You need to not be pushing your body to do more. And I just see a lot of people, a lot of trainers specifically, mind you, I end up working with them once their health finally fails, but they'll have large accounts and they are promoting this kind of very toxic messaging of like, it's not, it's pretty much, it's you who fails. It's not the diet, right? Which is different versus like, you're not failing, it's the diet that's failing you, but they really see you as the mistake, you as the person that's wrong and not their information. It's like, they're so closed-minded to that of like, maybe calorie restriction just doesn't actually work for people. They're like, no, it's all about calorie restriction. And so I'm like really happy to hear that you're able to step into like, oh, okay, this isn't working for clients.
Yeah, completely. And I think you'll have a lot of kind of evidence-based coaches, you know, where they'll be very methodical with everything they do in regards to kind of like calories and food timings and all this kind of stuff where they really dive into the research, but then they completely neglect all the research that proves that dieting, over restriction, calorie restriction can have so many health complications and risks involved with it, you know? So I feel like if you really are an evidence-based coach, you should be looking into this probably more so than the stuff you are looking at the moment, you know? Like, what's the point in being a really well-informed coach that knows kind of all about daily undulating periodization and biochemistry in regards to nutrition when in reality you can't help a client out because they're really struggling with their relationship with food, you know? So I feel like the emphasis of the fitness industry is completely in the wrong place at the moment. But I know why more coaches don't go down this route. Like, the stick I get on social media for trying to kind of shift the narrative is brutal sometimes. Like, some of the messages you get, like, most of the time you can kind of brush it off, but sometimes you're like, oh, that one hurt. And I get why people don't go down the content creation route doing this, because it can be pretty grim.
Totally. I don't think people understand that. I personally was vegan for many years in my disordered eating. And then I finally, came out and was like, I'm no longer vegan. I'm going to be eating all foods. And of course, from then on, I've had my whole, recovery journey. And I literally, I mean, when people say death threats, they're not joking. Like, death threats of being like, I'm going to go over to your house and kill your sister and eat her in front of you. I'm like, what? Like, it was just like, it was intense. And to be, here I am, I was like a young girl at this time in my life, and I was struggling through multiple eating disorders, anorexia, orthorexia, exercise addiction. And I finally was like, fine, I'm gonna eat all food. And then I get just the internet just attack me and be like, you shouldn't be doing that. You're such a bad person. You should feel so guilty for what you're doing. And I'm just like, whoa, this is so backwards. And I also wanted to mention, because this is a really good point. I was on a podcast a couple weeks ago, and someone actually asked me this question of like, why do you think the medical industry disregards amenorrhea all the time? And amenorrhea is, lack of period. And it's usually stereotypically seen in girls who are underweight, the runners, they're restricting their food and all that. And I had to think about that for a second, but I was like, I really honestly think, and now this is all conjecture and this is just my own opinion here, but I really think that a lot of these cases of girls with amenorrhea just totally get, bypassed, just thrown underneath the rug of like, no, we'll just give you birth control, it's fine, is because they're skinny. Where it's like, if they had amenorrhea and they were in a larger body, I bet you anything the doctors would be saying everything about it, right? But they just kind of look at these girls and they go, oh, you're skinny, you're a runner, you're good. And that's just like, so it's not even just diet culture, it can seep into the medical system, which is where this gets really dangerous.
It's a really cool area, and I mean, like, the research is very early days, and there is a shift happening to kind of more body acceptance within the medical industry. I speak to a lot of GPs and medical practitioners that are kind of championing this
Cool,
within the
cool.
healthcare setting, which is great. The amenorrhea one is interesting, isn't it? And I think you're pretty bang on there. I think mostly it's swept under the rug because society values thinness over everything else, and because you're kind of seen as a thin person, you're considered healthy, and that's why they probably don't care, you know. I'm sure that's probably me being kind of grouping all medical practitioners into one there, and I
Exactly.
know
That's why I said it's very
there's some
stereotypical,
brilliant ones
very
out there that will
conjecture
be
there. Yeah.
definitely calling it out. But yeah, it is, society values thinness, and if that's what you've achieved, then you're all good. That's what is seen as the pinnacle of health. Yeah, I think you're pretty bang on.
Yeah. So I'm curious, what was the worst thing you saw with your clients who came to you? Like, what was the number one thing that kept on coming up of like, this isn't working, this isn't working?
I think it was more less of like a thing that wasn't working, but more just the amount of people that were coming to me having worked with personal trainers and the amount of bad experiences people had had in the past. You know, like, it's very rare now that someone comes to me for personal training and they haven't had a negative experience with coaches in the past. And a lot of the time it is just because they put the emphasis once again in the wrong place. You know, like, some people will go to a personal trainer looking to just improve their health, you know. They're not looking to change body composition or anything like that. They go to a PT and they think, right, I want to learn how to exercise right and improve my diet,
yeah,
and
make sure my knees
straight
are
away,
healthy.
exactly. And straight away, it's like, right, before and after photos, measurements, over restricted
Yeah.
diet, we'll put you on really low calorie diets. And the emphasis was, as I said, just completely in the wrong place. And the default for personal trainers seems to be body composition changes, and that's how you improve your health, rather than, right, let's work with this client to improve their health, and then maybe body composition stuff happens as a byproduct. So it was just simply that, just it was completely round the wrong way. And yeah, I like to think if you're an observant coach who's looking to improve their practice to help people as much as possible, then you should pick up on that fairly quickly within your coaching journey. And if you're not, then I'd worry about how observant you're being with your clients.
It's a really, really good point. Yeah, the before and after photos can be very damaging, and just the fixation on the body composition while working out. I think that's what really leads to a lot of unhealthy relationships with exercise, because now it's not for the joy of moving your body. And I know you go to the gym, correct? Right? Like, you still train. Yeah, and same with me. I still train. I still go to the gym. I did take 8 months off for my whole kind of recovery. I needed to completely step away from it. But since then, I'm back at the gym. I like it. But it's just that it's like I like it. Like, I work out because it makes me feel good, because it's fun. I don't know, something my brain just really likes, the being in my body a lot and not having to. I'm on my computer all day, so I like to not have to think about emails and things like that. It feels good to just be in my body, see what my body can do. But the emphasis has never been, since recovery, obviously, before then, yes, but it's never been the changing my body or purging calories, which I think a lot of people don't realize you can be pretty much purging via exercise. I'm curious why you move. Like, what's your intention with your exercise?
So I go through stages, and I like strength training is always my first love. I always have enjoyed it from when I first started within the fitness industry. I still train for kind of muscle strength and muscle growth to some extent. I just do it in a fairly relaxed way. And then occasionally I do triathlons as well. So I love running. Running is kind of my one of the things that really helps to switch my brain off. Very few things are able to do that, and running does. And then I did an Ironman 70.3 like 4 years ago, and I'm doing another one at the end of this year. So
Cool. Fun.
I think I'm coming at it from a very different way than a lot of people maybe within this space of content creation that I'm in. In the fact that I do maybe have some more specific goals, and occasionally I will focus on things that are body composition related because I need to get lighter to perform better in a triathlon, you know? So I
That
think
doesn't,
it's
yeah, that's not a negative thing, and that's not a disordered thing. That's, again, it's the we like to be black and white. It's like food is good, food is bad, exercise is good, exercise is bad. And I think I'm like you, where I take a very more nuanced approach to, like, you can still have goals and desires, but you got to be realistic and do them in a healthy way. And it sounds like that's what you promote.
Completely agree. Like I used to just be strength training. That was all I did because I was so focused on changing the way that my body looked that I wasn't allowing myself to do anything else. Like I wouldn't go for a run when I kind of first got into strength training because I was worried that it would kind of ruin my gains, you know? Like it's amazing how fixated you can get. And yeah, I wanted to step back and learn to really enjoy it. So I now strength train like 3 times a week rather than like five or six like I used to. And then I supplement that with cardio, with stuff that I enjoy. And then occasionally I fancy challenging my body and I'll sign up to a bonkers event. And I think, as you said, we sit in this really messy middle point, which is really difficult to sell. It's a rubbish business model, let's be honest. Like if we were on either end of the spectrum, we were
I
like
have
pretty pro
questioned one or two
focusing.
times my work, but
It's
yeah.
so funny, isn't it? Like we can't package what we're doing and sell it easily because there is no way to do that. If we were full kind of no tracking, no focusing on any like on the end of the spectrum there, and then if we were also kind of pro bodybuilders where we were saying, right, here's a 6-week program where you can change the way your body looks, like that's easily sellable. But we are not. We're in the messy middle that is a bit more vague, you know?
So I find my work ends up being just really helping people just tune in, tune in, tune in, because it's from there that they can decide, what is being supportive, what is not, what is too extreme, what is not pushing me enough. Like, and they're able to find that balance for themselves. And it's like, Yeah, it's like we're trying to package up this experience of balance and health that we have felt ourselves. But I'm like, but it's something that you only really understand until you experience it. Like, I know when I was struggling with my exercise addiction and with being vegan and everything like that, like my mom used to yell at me and she used to say, balance, Chloe, like balance. And I'm like, I don't get that. Like, I don't get what you're saying. I had to experience it for myself to really understand what like balance in my life and in my health looks like. And it's hard to sell to people because I'm like, it's an experience that they need to feel. And it's not like a to-do checklist. So it's not as easy as here's the meal plan that I'm going to send to you.
And it comes with experience, doesn't it? Like you have to kind of work with yourself over a long period of time to come to that point. Like I'll have people coming to me. I know other coaches who refuse to work with people when they come to them with weight loss goals, and I will still happily work with people. But my goal is to always shift the focus into something that is healthy and we can prioritize building strength or improving your diet. And then maybe that will happen as a byproduct, you know? And I think there's a sensible way that you can do it working as a coach that is not becoming too overly critical of people who are trying to fit in society better because society values thinness, you know? Like people are always going to want to come to you for those goals when society is built like it is now. Excuse me, I've got a very croaky voice. Ever since I had COVID like a month ago, I get croaky voice. Really? It's not good, I know.
Ugh. Yeah, well, I like what you're saying of like, hey, I'm trying to teach people how to do this in a way that is supportive for their health and going to be sustainable. AKA, this is not the Kim Kardashian, let's starve ourselves for 3 weeks and eat tomatoes. Yeah. And it's, I know body composition goals or weight loss or anything can get very, very torn apart in the industry that we're in. And I mean, and it all depends on where you're at. I work with girls who are struggling with eating disorders where I'm like, that's not on the table. We're not talking about weight loss. I don't deal
same,
with
same. Absolutely.
Loss.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, I'm helping you get your period back. I'm helping you gain weight, get in a healthy body size. And I think that's just, we have to understand that there's other people on the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Who are trying to find that balance for themselves and getting to that natural, just, you know, range of weight that feels good for them.
Yeah. It also just highlights, doesn't it, that the fitness industry is always trying to find this like perfect diet or perfect exercise plan. And that just from what you said highlights that there is no one approach for people. You know, like I work with performance athletes who we're really particular with everything that we do, otherwise they're not going to win at competitions, you know. But then I have people who are on the other end of the spectrum who have had eating disorders throughout their life, and we don't put any emphasis on calories or the way that their body looks or whatever. Like we do it in a completely more kind of intuitive way of helping them to improve their health. And there is no one fixed way, you know, and that's the beauty and frustration of fitness. You know, it's why I love it. I love preaching a message about health and fitness because it is so varied. It's awesome. But once again, it's not very sellable that way.
Yeah, so I'm curious in your content, because you said that you can get a lot of like negative feedback. I know there's a lot of positive. I've read a lot of your comments. I've watched a lot of your stuff. It's really amazing content. And you're saying a lot of really just great things, and you're bringing to awareness a lot of important topics. But I'm curious if you've noticed like what is like if you were to create a reel that you're like, oh, I know this reel is going to get all the hate. Like what would that topic be?
I think it would be maybe like calorie counting, I think would probably be one of those. I've not created many pieces of content on this because it is so kind of multifaceted, and I find it really difficult to make a little short video of it. I feel like it needs a longer video. And I think highlighting the dangers and risks of calorie counting and being very specific with your macronutrient and calorie intake, I think would be one that would make people bite the hardest. Because most of the people that troll me, if you want to call it that, are men. It's usually men that have slightly bigger muscles than average and spend a lot of time in the gym and take a lot of photos of themselves, because I've been on their pages once they troll me, you know. So there is this demographic of people that tend to have an issue with the content that I make. And I mean, I could go on for ages about why I think that is, from kind of toxic masculinity to them really putting the emphasis on the way that their body looks and probably being very unhappy with the way that their body looks too, hence why they spend so much time in the gym. Like it's so complex. And I think it'd probably be around focusing on body composition and calorie counting would probably get one of the biggest kick ups, I think.
I'm curious if I could just ask you, what's just a couple, just like maybe two or three kind of arguments you have with calorie counting?
The calorie counting should not be for everyone at all. Like a lot of the clients I work with, we don't even talk about going down the calorie counting route because of their relationship with food they've had in the past. It's just a really bad idea. There's a lot of coaches, the default is you will calorie count. If you work with me, you will track your calories. And this is how we're going to improve your health. Once again, using quotation marks, because the emphasis is on the way that the body looks, right? I think calorie counting can be a useful tool. If you've got a good relationship with food, it can be a really educational process where you learn about all the foods that you're eating and then you move away from it, you know, like it's a short tool and then you move into a way that feels more intuitive, you know. And I think
you don't want to be 90 years old and still, you know, putting in cereal.
Absolutely. Like I did calorie counting in the past, I have done, but now I did it for a period of time. I learned about the food that I eat. I know what's roughly in the foods that I eat, and I know how my diet needs to be set up for me to feel good and to perform well. You know, like it can be a really cool tool, but it's not for everyone, and it should not be used with everyone.
So you're saying it can be a tool of gentle awareness for someone to understand in the beginning, hey, where am I even at and what's going to work for me? The issue becomes when we put judgments of our moral worth associated with it, when we become obsessed with it, when it becomes like, and now I feel guilty for eating above that. That's what ends up, you know, going awry there. So I really think maybe the main thing that you're saying here is it's the intention behind it. And that's what I say with a lot of stuff. Like even like I, you know, was talking about intuitive eating the other day. And I mentioned, I was like, listen, some people literally just do not digest dairy. They don't. That's not like disordered for them to stay away from dairy. You know, that can be their form of intuitive eating of that doesn't work well for me. I'm not going to buy a bunch of dairy products. But then some anti-diet culture space. Yeah, that's you. Okay, there you go. Some of the anti-diet culture space will step in though and be like, that's so wrong. You have to eat everything. I'm like,
it's so polarized at the moment. I know that the kind of health at every size movement was potentially part of that. I know there's a lot of shifts going on within the health at every size movement at the moment, with one of the kind of main authors of one of the leading books who is kind of seen as one of the authority figures, reached Harrison? Out. Ooh, what was that, sorry?
Is her name Christy Harrison? Is that her?
I can't remember the name, so I don't want to say yes in case I get it wrong. and she reached out to, there was a lot of criticisms about her approach and about her leading all of the stages and events around the Health at Every Size movement and being seen as the authority figure when she was perhaps not of the demographic of who the movement was created for or who should be championed by. So I think that was kind of where it's at.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it is Christy Harrison, but yeah, we're not gonna put that name to this story because I'm not sure. But she is someone who is of a smaller body size who has always been a big promoter of the health at every size.
Essentially, and that's I think is where I like to is where I have some skepticism of some of the content I create. You know, like I know that as soon as I start talking about body positivity, once again, is I'm aware that I'm stepping into a space that wasn't designed by me or for people like me, and I have to respect that too. My thoughts on the Health Every Size movement, my podcast that I have, we had a guy called Dr. Giles Yeo on, and he is a geneticist at, I want to say Cambridge University. If I've got that wrong, I feel really bad. I think it's Cambridge University. And he specializes in obesity and genetics. And he is a fascinating guy. He is brilliant. And we asked him for his thoughts on it. And he summarized it really well on the fact that you can have health at many sizes, but you can't have health at every size on an individual level.
I love that.
So no one individually knows where their healthy set point is, you know, like I might be able to be in a much larger body and be incredibly healthy and fine, whereas I might not be, you know, my health markers might be bad. So I think that was his main criticism of it. And I quite liked that. So I tend to stick with that definition that he had.
You know, I really love that is because the one thing that I've always, it's kind of irked me about the health at every size is that I work with girls on the opposite side of the spectrum who are super underweight. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. You like a woman who's, you know, 30 years old with a 7% body fat percentage, you can't be healthy. I'm not going to call that healthy. So yeah.
I think the practitioners on that promote that message, I think there's a lot of them that are a bit more sensible with it, and they'd maybe acknowledge some of the shortcomings of the wording around the name of it. But yeah, I think the message, once again, if I'm talking on behalf of a movement that wasn't created by me, then I think the message is just generally that the emphasis needs to shift away from body size. And I think that is a strong something I really, really agree with. The fitness industry just has this obsession, you know. You buy any fitness magazine and who's on the front of it, it's going to be some absolute jacked guy who clearly takes steroids, let's be honest. No one ever calls him out and tells him that his health behaviors are really unhealthy when they are. But as soon as you put someone on a magazine cover who's in a larger body, oh my God, the stick that they get online is brutal. So it's not about health. That just proves that it's not about health. It's simply about the size that your body is. And that's the issue.
Yeah, I think it would do everyone really well to understand kind of the markers of a good metabolic rate, meaning good digestion, you know, hair that's growing and not falling out, good immunity, good sleep, the ability to sleep when you're too, you know, malnourished, you don't sleep well. Looking at those things, a monthly menstrual cycle for a woman, like those are the things that we should be prioritizing and looking at that and being like, do I fall into that? And desiring that, like desiring to have energy, desiring to have the balanced hormones, desiring to have the good immune system, the good digestion, and not putting the emphasis on the weight anymore. Because yeah, it's like, I know personally for me, I've been at a bigger weight when I went through my whole journey, and I was very healthy at that higher weight. Very, very healthy. Now, someone might have looked at that and been like, but you don't have six-pack abs, but you have like, you have some cellulite, you have all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, and I was the healthiest I have ever been.
Yeah.
Since my recovery, you know, and I've balanced, or I shouldn't say I've balanced out, genetically, I've gone right back to the place where my mom and my two sisters are genetically. Like, it's just, that's like kind of where my body after recovery kind of just fell naturally. But I'm always, 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 always using metrics of my actual health to determine if I'm healthy versus my body size and shape, because I understand that I can have more body fat on me and I can be really healthy.
Absolutely. I mean, kind of another clear example of it not being about genuine health is, like, I get comments from these bodybuilder guys telling me that I look like shit in quotation marks. Can I swear? I apologize if I'm not allowed to.
Totally.
Okay, good. Yeah, like telling me that my body looks like shit. And I'm like, if I'm like, this is usually kind of what's advertised as like societal norms, what everyone should strive for. If I am now being told that I look like shit, like imagine people in larger bodies, the amount of stick that they're getting when they're starting to create this kind of content as well. So it's, yeah, it's definitely not about health. It's just the image. So we keep championing our message and we'll hopefully shift the industry slowly.
Yeah, and maybe we need to call ourselves now the weird in between middle group. Right. Definitions of what it is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, just like a really vague name as well, just to kind of emphasize it. Yeah.
I'm glad. Well, it's you and I, and I'm sure we can come up with one or two other people to join us.
I'm sure we can. I'd be like the Avengers. It'd be great.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I'm really, really appreciative that you came onto the podcast with us today and we had this great just like a banter back and forth. Like I said in the beginning, I'm like, I'm sure we will find things to talk about.
Sure we could talk for a lot longer as well. I'm sure we could just keep on going.
totally. I want to ask you one more question before we kind of take off here. What's the number one thing, and this could be a mental thing or a physical thing, that you do that makes you healthy? Like, you would attribute that to like your overall well-being?
That's a really good question. I mean, I have to say exercise is definitely one of those, you know. It's running is amazing for me, for my headspace. It's as I said, it's one thing that's always really helped me out. Like when family issues, health issues and stuff. Like I run and it helps to clear my head and it's when I can do my best thinking. So that's great. But I'd also say music. Like music for me is such a big help. I played guitar for many years growing up. I still dabble occasionally. I used to play in bands and I'm not very good, but I just listening to music, playing guitar, that's one thing that really helps me to switch off. I think as well, because my job is I coach people for exercise and nutrition all the time. And then I'm creating social media content around exercise and nutrition all the time. Sometimes I need to kind of disconnect from that. And music is the thing that I absolutely love. So yeah, I'll probably go with that.
I love that. I'm right there with you. The music is, dancing is my thing. I ecstatic dance every single week and just music concerts, everything that has always been my like escape. I do want to dive into this for just one more minute.
Go for it.
Make this a full thought here. How would you describe your relationship to exercise and to running in particular?
I would say now it's very healthy. It wasn't at one point. It was fairly obsessive before, and also probably done out of fear as well. I think initially when I first got into running, putting on body fat, my body not looking the way that society is telling me that it's supposed to look. I think that's where I was approaching exercise and running initially. But now I'm in a really good place with it. Finally, I can say like I've got a really healthy relationship with exercise. When I don't feel great, I don't feel bad about taking days off. As I said, I had COVID like a month ago. I didn't train for like 2.5-3 weeks afterwards. I could have gone back sooner, but I felt like my body wasn't ready and it's fine. Like nothing bad was going to happen. So I feel like I've got a really good relationship with my body and movement now, which has taken years to get to, but it's a good feeling.
So I wanted to ask that because I know a lot of people who listen to my podcast are experiencing exercise addiction, and it's really hard for them to let go of something like running because they're like, but my mental health and I like it and I need it and all of that. And for, you know, recovery, for really balancing themselves back out, they often need to completely step away from those things. That can be really hard when they hear people like that being like, the thing that makes me healthy is running. And then they're like, see, I need to run more. But I wanted to ask you how your relationship to it is, because that's the key defining factor right there, is that you don't have a tumultuous relationship with it anymore. You can take those breaks. You're finding joy in it, and it actually really is improving your mental health. When someone comes to me and they're suffering with exercise addiction and they say, I can't get rid of running because it improves my mental health, I have to just pinpoint the 50 other things that they came to me for that dictates that their mental health is not in a good state. So it might temporarily kind of give them that increase of dopamine and make them think that they're increasing their mental health, but it's actually long-term really destroying it. And so I wanted to make that just like distinction there. And that's the weird, messy, nuanced place that we're in, right? Because we're being like, exercise isn't bad. Hey, it can improve your mental health. It can feel really good.
Yeah, it's true. Like some of the content you'll see, like some of the videos I'll post, it'll be, I posted one like 2 or 3 days ago about kind of being delighted when your workout buddy cancels and it means you don't have to go and work out. You know, I think it's really important for trainers to show this kind of stuff, because it shouldn't all be about hashtag no excuses, no days off and all of this kind of nonsense. You know, like knowing when to rest is as important as knowing when to exercise. Like it's huge. Rest is so underplayed and one of the most ignored aspects of fitness when it comes to personal training and whatever coaching. It's as soon as you realize how important rest is and how everything else benefits from it, that's when you can start to really relax and enjoy the process.
Yeah. And if you don't take those frequent rest, you know, if you're working out seven days a week, 24/7, then you're going to have to do what I take my clients through, which is the journey of completely resting for months at a time, sometimes upwards of a year. And that's hard for people. So it's like, learn how to just take the necessary rest now. I know I am very intuitive with my exercising, and there are just frequently days. It's not even like every once in a while. It's like there's often 3-4 days a week where I don't work out at all. Cause I'm like, that's not going to promote well-being with me right now. Like I'm sore, I'm tired. I'd rather be out in nature. There's other things that rather do right now. And I think it's important to always be intuitive with your movement as well, so that you don't get into the burnout area. So for those of you guys experiencing exercise addiction, you might need to take a break, but coming back into it, the goal would be to be more intuitive with your working out and allowing those rest days so that you don't get into the burnout again.
Completely. Yeah, I completely agree. It's really frustrating how ignored it often is. Like, I'll get clients coming to me, I'll send them a training program. They'll be like, oh, is that it? And it's like, yeah, this is like, it can be really straightforward. Like, we don't have to overcomplicate this. You don't have to run yourself into the ground doing a crazy exercise routine. Take it easy, focus on rest and enjoy it.
But the running yourself into the ground is the obsession with losing weight and the body composition.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if it's for health, you would clearly understand that rest is a really essential part of like building muscle and repairing your body after working out. So it you always got
to. You know, I've actually never put those two together. So yeah, you're completely right. I like it. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to let you go to the rest of your, it's probably evening for you over there.
I was going to say it's evening, it's dinner time now. Yeah, I'm off to dinner. Time? Yeah.
Great. It is mid-morning for me, so I'm going to let you go. But thank you so much, Michael. All of your socials and everything will be down below. You guys will binge watch his Instagram just like I did. It's great. Love it. I enjoy the comedy and also just like the truthfulness of everything you post.
Love it. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.